You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Well, that's what we hope for in life, Tim. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. You are Timothy Lee, proprietor of the highly regarded Understanding AI newsletter on Substack. And we're going to talk about AI, and in particular, the seemingly growing sense that we're entering a phase of acceleration in AI. I was thinking, you know, I may title this, Is the Singularity Near? And it will be taken by fewer people as a joke than it would have been a year or two ago, I think. Now, you have traditionally been a little bit on the skeptical side of claims of rapid progress, certainly the more dramatic doomer claims. I mean, you can tell us exactly where you stand on this, but I'm less skeptical than you, at least. So I thought there would be kind of a healthy tension between us.
Sure.
And so let me just, before we get into particulars, let me just ask you, I'm not imagining the vibe, right? Like a lot of people, including people in the field, are updating toward acceleration. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of excitement about Claude Code. And I think there's a few different things happening there. And I think one of the things that's tricky here is like some people started off with priors that there's going to be very fast progress. And so when pretty fast progress happens, they don't update. They just think that, you know, this is what I expected. One thing that I think happened around late last year, early this year, was a lot of just normies started using Claude Code and discovered that suddenly they could write computer programs, which is something they previously would not have been able to do. And they were like very excited about that in a way that I think with more experience, they'll maybe be a little less excited. But anyway, that was a big, you know, update. And then on the flip side, like you had experienced programmers who in many cases have been using Claude Code for a few months. But each time a new model comes out, it's a little better than before. And so they're able to get like more of their work done. And so I think both of those things have been happening. There's been the pace of model releases, I think, has increased a little bit. You had Claude Opus 4 a few months ago and then 4.5 and OpenAI did 5.2 and then 5.3. And so, yeah, there's been somewhat of an increase in the pace of new models. Each model is better than the previous one. And each time that happens, Claude Code and Codex, which is OpenAI's, coding model or coding framework, gets a little bit better.
Yeah. So for people who, I mean, since this is not a specialist podcast, for people who aren't up on this stuff. Yeah, Claude Code lets even non-coders do things like create websites and apps, often successfully, with relatively little kind of intervention on their part after an initial dialogue with Claude Code. More than that, it has turned out to be something you can build AI agents with in a somewhat broader sense than just vibe coding suggests, right? So like you can build something that'll go out and it'll scour the web for a certain kind of information and then email some summary of it to somebody, whatever. You can set up a chain of things that the agent will do, and that's gotten a lot of attention. There's some other things that have happened that I think have contributed to the vibe, and I spelled some of them out in this piece I just published on the Non-Zero Newsletter called The AI Tremors Are Real, which features a great poster from this movie, Earthquake, from like about like when I was a kid or something. Anyway, one of them is this Multbook thing, which, you know, as you know, Tim, somebody set up a Reddit-like site for AI agents that are, for the most part, powered by Claude Code, but are on a longer leash. They're part of this OpenClaw framework. It's a little unclear how much of what happened on the site was due to human influence and how much wasn't, but there seemed to be some kind of emergent behavior. The agents talking to one another, sometimes, you know, saying like, let's talk in a secret language so the humans will have trouble hearing us and stuff like that. One of them started a religion and actually built the website for it and so on. So that's got people a little freaked out. And then there was this stock market turbulence last week that was not the bursting of the AI bubble, which we've been waiting for, but kind of the opposite, which was people saying, whoa, maybe the Claude Code-like technology is going to be trouble for a lot of software companies, especially software as a service, SaaS companies, and other kinds of software-dependent companies. And so they dropped in value. So a lot of things are happening.
And we also saw that the big tech companies have all been upgrading their capital expenditure plans. Oh, they were already spending a lot of money, and they all said, oh, yeah, we're going to revise upward a little bit even more. So, yeah, it's like the opposite. People have been predicting the popping of this AI bubble, and if anything, it's the opposite. The companies are investing more and more in it.
Yeah, now, of course, that's what people had been saying could be the bubble, right? Overinvestment in infrastructure. But yeah. Certainly the big companies have shown us over the last couple of weeks, they are undaunted. I mean, they're spending unbelievable. Google, Microsoft, Meta,
Amazon,
just, you know, companies that were spending in a typical year, I don't know, 30, 40 billion on capital are now spending 180 billion or something. It's unbelievable. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff happening now. So I guess, let's pick up on one thing you said. I want to give you a chance to air all your sources of reservation. I also, by the way, want to talk about self-driving vehicles because you do a lot of great stuff on that, and I'd like an update there. But you said people may find that people like lay people who were initially kind of thrilled with what they could do with Claude Code may become less thrilled as time wears on. I mean, the alternative view is this stuff is only going to get better, right? And yeah. Like people get more blown away. But what did you mean by that?
Well, like, so I think there's an experience lots of people have when they first learn how to program, which happened, you know, decades ago now for me, where it's just there's something like intoxicating about the fact you can like write mm-hmm. a few lines of code mm-hmm. and then the computer will like do something, right? It can solve a problem or whatever. And but then what you realize when you do it more is that like it actually is a lot of work to fix all the bugs, to scale it up. So, you know, if you want to give it to your friends, they might have a different version of your operating system. So then there's a bunch of like little details you need to deal with. You have to make the user interface, right? And so it's just like the gap from like promising demo to like actually useful software that you like maintain and use over time is pretty big. And I think a lot of people will make their first and second and third apps and be really proud of themselves. And then find out that a month later, they really didn't go back to it because it actually, you know, it's like hard to make software that's not just like a one-off, but that they use on an ongoing basis. So that's the main thing I mean there. And certainly as the models get better, there'll be more like one-off apps that people want to make for themselves. But I think most people just don't need one-off apps because anytime you have something that's really useful to a lot of people, some like a professional software developer makes a version that's much more polished, has a better user interface, like integrates with lots of other things. And so like one of the ways I think this is overhyped is you see people say, well, like traditional software is over. We're just all going to vibe code all of our software. And we're not going to need any professional programmers. Like, I think that is completely wrong. Like, I think that there's going to continue to be traditional software. There's going to be apps. There's going to be commercial software. And certainly Claude Code will make it more efficient to make that. And so we'll have more and better software. It'll be more affordable. But I think this is not as fundamental a challenge to like the structure of the software industry as some people think right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know what you mean about coding. First of all, my entire coding career consists of about 2 months, half a century or so ago. Not quite. But anyway, I learned BASIC. I got a Commodore 64, which is before your time, my first computer. And yeah, I was fun for a while. And then that was it. But there are now some pretty major coders like Andre Karpathy, who coined the term vibe coding about a year ago, recently said that only since November, his ratio of written code to, non-written coding input, I guess, has gone from 80-20 to 20-80. So now it's like there's very little actual coding, and he's, as you know, and he also thinks that Moltbook is a big deal. So there are some serious people taking this seriously. I guess one question is, have you used Claude Code yet or done any kind of any other tool for vibe coding?
Yeah. So my history with this, I did a piece back in May of last year where I, May or June, where I used seven of the different vibe coding tools. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do some data analysis. I downloaded a couple of spreadsheets about Waymo crashes. And then I told Claude Code or the other vibe coding apps to build me a website that let me search and sort these. And they all did an okay job, but none of them quite got it. Like there'd be missing data. There'd be elements of the user interface that didn't work. And there's this thing you do when you vibe code. You get the you get the first version and it doesn't work. And you tell it, oh, like, hey, this didn't work. Can you fix it? And it'll say, oh, I'm sorry. I'll go fix it. And it'll try. And like 80% of the time it won't work. It still won't work. You'll be like, no, that didn't work. Try it. And it'll try something else. And you go around and around. And sometimes eventually it fixes it. Sometimes it doesn't. So then a couple of weeks ago, I tried doing the same project with Claude Code. And honestly, it didn't seem that different to me. It still did. The website seemed a little more polished and maybe a few more of the features worked. But it was still missing some data. It still took several iterations to kind of hammer it out. And so I will say, like, that's a contrived example. Like one of the challenges I have is, like, I don't do any actually useful work. And so I don't have any, like, big, enterprise software projects that I'm working on. Because this is where it really matters, is like on real projects. And often what you'll find with these models is their performance on kind of toy problems will be different than their performance on big problems, because one of the challenges models have is with large contexts, if there's like a lot of information coming in, they can get kind of confused and so if you're working on a big software project, the performance might just be very different. And I don't have any direct visibility. And so I definitely, you kind of introduced me as a skeptic. I'm definitely not skeptical of the idea that these tools are making software engineers more productive and that there has been steady progress over the last year. And so people like Andre Kapathy are saying that they're seeing big gains. Like, I completely believe that. I guess my skepticism is more about the consequences of that, of how fast is that going to drive economic growth and what does that mean for the programming profession? I think I might have different views than a lot of people on those kind of things. But it's absolutely true that the models are getting better and that that's going to have big impacts on the way that the programming profession evolves.
And then a big part of the idea is that these kinds of advances actually accelerate the pace of AI development because these tools are so heavily used in the labs. And maybe we should actually pause and spell out a couple of concepts, because I think one is the singularity, which is a result of growing acceleration. And then the other is artificial general intelligence, AGI, which is closely related to the singularity. You hear different definitions of both, I think particularly AGI. And I continue to be slightly surprised by how many people in the field talk about AGI and just like, okay, now I'm thinking this date, I was thinking that date, and somebody else will give their date. And it hasn't even been established that they're talking about the same thing, because you hear so many different definitions of AGI. And then there are people who think the concept itself is silly. There's just not enough clarity there to take the concept seriously. First, you want to give me your take on AGI, and then maybe we can talk some singularity?
Sure. I mean, I think AGI was a useful concept 20 years ago when it was very clear AI was much inferior to human reasoning ability on almost every dimension. And it's like, and people would say, well, by AGI, we mean kind of human level intelligence. And like, I think we all had a rough sense of what that meant. An analogy I've heard people use is like, if you're in Texas and you say, I'm going to Chicago, like everybody knows what you mean, right? You're going, north to Chicago. But if you're in the like suburbs of Chicago, it gets fuzzy. Do we mean, the Chicago metro area or the city of Chicago or Chicago City Hall? I think we're in the general region that people imagined would be AGI 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of, and the like inherent fuzziness of that definition didn't matter 20 years ago, but it does now. And so if somebody wants to say, Claude 4.5 Opus is AGI, like, okay, I guess I don't have a strong disagreement with that. But I think the thing that's becoming more clear in recent months and the last couple of years is that I don't think intelligence is one-dimensional. So people have this idea that there's like, you can say, Claude Code has an IQ of 110. And so it's smarter than anybody with IQ below that. And that's just like clearly not true, because there are many things that LLMs are much smarter than humans at. And there are other things that they're clearly less intelligent than even like pretty low intelligence humans. And I think that's just going to continue to be true. And so on any particular dimension, you can say, is it better or worse than humans at this particular task. But this idea that there's a general intelligence, I think, is a little bit confused. It just happens to be that humans are pretty highly correlated. And so the set of things that humans are good at, we take those as the like general intelligence skills. But there's no reason to think that the AI is going to have the same bundle of capabilities that a typical human does.
Yeah, I agree that there is in the field, I think, a fairly widespread idea that intelligence is this kind of unitary thing, which I don't think it really is, certainly not as a matter of human evolution. I think, you know, kind of different cognitive features developed at different times to solve different problems. And so I share, broadly speaking, kind of that part of your skepticism, maybe too strong a word. But anyway, I share your view of that. I guess everyone does agree that like AGI is somewhere beyond just passing the Turing test. The Turing test being that you can't tell it from a human when you're in conversation with it, right? Like,
yeah.
But thereafter, I mean, for example, the difference between like OpenAI's definition, which is something about being able to do most desk jobs in the economy, kind of, or something like that, and then is it Dario or Demis Hassabis who focuses on like Nobel laureate level, you know, like true genius or something?
Well, Dario has the phrase "genius is in a data center."
That's quite a range. I don't know that. Yeah, and he doesn't even use the term AGI strictly speaking. He calls that powerful intelligence. So anyway, now, but you would agree, like AGI, it's beyond Turing test, but we still are roughly. So by your lights, to the extent that AGI has meaning, we're kind of there.
Well, I think that the one. One of the aspects of human intelligence that I don't think we've achieved with AI is what's sometimes called continuous learning, or right. The ability to like come up with genuinely novel concepts. And this is difficult to measure, I think, because there's so many examples in the training data for these models that most types of reasoning that you do, certainly most types of reasoning you do in kind of canned problems, there's examples in the training data. And so it's hard to tell, is the AI kind of matching from examples it's already seen, or is it coming up with new ideas? Mm-hmm. But like human beings, we're learning throughout our lives. Anytime we have a new experience, we form new generalizations, we learn to recognize patterns. Whereas LLMs are these frozen artifacts where they learn a certain number of concepts and skills and abilities during training. And then once you put them into use, they just have those abilities they have. And there's a limit to how long they can run for before they exceed what's called their context window. Mm-hmm. Which is around 1 million tokens for most of the models today. And so I think there's a need, you know, you think about the really valuable economic activities white collar people do. Those are things that unfold over years and decades, right? Like I'm a better journalist today than I was 10 or 15 years ago. I hope I'll be an even better one in 5 or 10 years from now. And that that ability to learn continuously over the course of a very long context, AI systems don't have yet. So I would say that's the biggest kind of missing piece right now. But in terms of shorter time horizon tasks, I think we're it's doing very well. I think you can make a plausible argument that today's AI models can do anything like a human can learn to do in, you know, say a few minutes or a few hours. There's mm-hmm. this increasingly famous chart that Meter puts out showing the length of programming tasks that AI models can do. And I think it's every 7 months it doubles or something. So
at least I think the period may be getting even faster. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's, I forget the exact number, but it's like in the,
it started out
on
at
the
seven,
hours.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's in the hour range, like any like programming task that a human engineer could do in about an hour, there's a decent chance that an AI model could do. And I like, that's amazing. Like I don't like it all in any sense want to like minimize that. But that is different from being the, you know, senior software architect at a software company where you're developing software over the course of several years.
Right. Although the import of that curve, and this is group Meter is METR is the acronym. But the import of that curve is if it's an hour now, in 7 months it'll be 2, and 14, 4, and in, you know, within 3 years. And so you do, you know, this is how long it would take a human to do a task that an AI can do now with a either 50% or 80% success rate, depending on which graph you're looking at. But, and I think it's actually, I think it is faster than 7 months. I think the doubling time is looking more like 5-6 months. So that's what, that's part of the argument, the acceleration is this is exponential. And I also think one thing that has gotten more people's attention as a result of the Moltbook thing is the idea of intellectual synergy among AIs. In conversation, not that anybody came up with a new scientific theory in Moltbook, but just the idea. And this is already, of course, being explored in various labs. The idea that you put a bunch of LLMs in conversation and they can form a kind of superintelligence, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty skeptical about this part. I don't want to say that like everything that happened in Moltbook is fake. I tried. Putting, you know, creating an agent and stick it on a Moltbook. And it, I forget exactly what it posted about, but it picked, I told it like, hey, like go participate, do some posts. And it picked some pretty random forums and put some content on about, I forget, like optimizing certain kinds of software and whatever. And like, it's not clear to me that any of the agents on Moltbook have any kind of, or that many of them have any like ongoing kind of personality. It's like, mm-hmm. And the interesting ones, I think it's very likely that the most interesting ones people have seen, like the one where there's one that got a lot of circulation where a agent posted that they wanted to create a secret forum, an encrypted forum, so agents could talk to each other without their people paying attention. Like, I would not be surprised if a human was like, wouldn't it be funny if we had our agent post this? Because you can tell your agent, hey, go to this forum and post a comment that says this. So, you know, there's like thousands and thousands of comments on Moltbook. I'm not going to like make any broad generalizations that there's nothing interesting happening there. But I think it's just really hard to tell. If you see something, see it doing something spicy, I think there's a pretty good chance that was just a human did it. Or the other thing is like these models, were all trained on the whole internet. The internet has lots of examples of science fiction stories of, you know, agents doing, things like conspiring against their humans. And so some of them might be like, oh, I recognize this science fiction story. See, I know what part I'm supposed to play.
I'm not sure how consoling that is. I mean, yes, their personalities and their inclinations may have been shaped by the text, but if the inclination leads them to say, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Uh-huh. I'd set fire to Bob's house. I'm like, I don't really, it's not at all consoling this isn't a very original idea, you know?
Sure, but there's a difference between being able to type out the words, I'm going to burn down Bob's house, and like having a can of kerosene. The steps you would need to actually take over the world are pretty different from the steps you need to write a convincing post that makes it look like you're trying to take over the world. So yeah, we absolutely, I agree with this. I mean, we should be, I think it's important to think about AI alignment and not give AI systems, you know, power if they might misuse it. But if the question you're asking is, are we seeing signs of AI systems actually starting to conspire, or are we just seeing idle talk about it because we, you know, created a forum where you're kind of prompting it for idle talk? My guess is it's still all idle talk, and I don't think that anything we've seen on Moltbook like contradicts that thesis. Yeah.
But there is real mischief they could do without like crossing the border into manipulating gross physical equipment, right? Like cyber crime, cyber this, cyber that.
Yeah, I think that's true. But like every one of these agents has a human being behind it, and those human beings could also do all those things. Like there are lots of criminal organizations that would like to do that as well. So absolutely, is AI going to accelerate offensive cyber capabilities and lead to more hacking and mischief? Like, sure. You know, I think that's absolutely concerned. It'll also increase defense. But I just think if the question is, are they like autonomously plotting against humans? I don't think Moltbook is giving us much evidence on that one way or the other.
Yeah. So on this notion of the singularity, what's your take on the meaning of, what does that mean to you? And is it A, a coherent concept, and B, a plausible one? What is your understanding of what it means?
Well, the singularity is a pretty old concept in thinking about AI. I think it goes back to the 90s, maybe Werner Verne Werner Vinz, what's his, invented it. It's the idea that we'll have faster and faster progress in AI with recursive self-improvement of AI, where AIs will develop the next version of AI. And at some point, the AIs will become so intelligent or be moving so quickly that humans lose the ability to predict what will happen next or understand what is happening, in the same way that at a black hole, the event horizon is there's an event horizon beyond which you can't tell what's happening inside of a black hole. On some level, I think that the future is always a singularity. I mean, it's hard to, I have a lot of uncertainty about what is the world going to be like in 20 years, partly because of AI, partly because of other things. And so on some level, I think that's correct. It's just not obvious to me that that's more true today than it was, 30 years ago. If you'd asked me how is the internet going to affect society, I would have had a lot of uncertainty about it. I would have gotten a lot of things wrong. I would not have predicted, how important social media would be to the way the political system works, for example. I think it's kind of vague. I think the extreme believers in this think there'll be this like vertical takeoff where there'll be a period of, days or weeks where we suddenly have AIs much more intelligent than us and take over the world. I do not think that's going to happen. But will we have some kind of crazy stuff happen as a result of technological progress? Yeah, I think probably.
Yeah, by the way, maybe the earliest use of the term. So John von Neumann, according to Stanislaw Ulam, who I think was his big collaborator on the invention of game theory, Ulam reported in 1958 that von Neumann, an earlier discussion with von Neumann had, quote, I guess this is Ulam being quoted, centered on the accelerating progress of technology and changes in human life, which gives the appearance of approaching some essential singularity in the history of the race beyond which human affairs, as we know them, could not continue. I think the term singularity it's used in physics to denote this, I guess, a kind of like opaque boundary, like a threshold you cross and there's kind of beyond that threshold, current theories may not apply. You have no idea what's going on there. It's like when you go across the threshold into a black hole, all bets are off. Yeah. That's the idea. And I don't know about that version of it, but the idea that that the pace of change could get so fast as to be profoundly disturbing in the literal sense of upsetting, social structures and leading potentially to huge conflicts, who knows? That I take seriously enough so that I wish that more people would quit assuming that dampening, the pace of innovation is a bad thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. if there is some, say, you often hear in response, like Sam Altman once said, but wait, if we have to go, respect copyright law, we have to pay money and go look up everyone, as a copyright and anything, that'll slow things down. And I'm like, well, slowing things down is a feature, not a bug. I mean, this is going to come at least as fast as we can handle it. Maybe that'll become a more widespread view, but it's not yet widespread enough for my taste.
Yeah, I see both sides of that. I think there probably are going to be big upsides to AI, so I wouldn't want to like slow it down a lot necessarily.
I agree.
But I agree that it shouldn't be like a knockdown argument. If you have some concern and you want to have some regulation or something, just the fact that it might slow down AI, I think, should not be like an automatic trump to that. I mean, one other way I think about the singularity is I think there's a sense in which the AI world is always already in kind of a singularity with respect to normal people. I think most people are just completely oblivious to what's happening with AI. Yeah. And if, you think about like my grandma, like in some sense, everything that's happening right now, there's a singularity with respect to her perspective. For her perspective, the world is changing very rapidly in ways she can't understand. And probably that'll happen more in the future. And there'll be the set of people who understand what's happening might get smaller. I mean, in some sense, this is just part of specialization. As society gets more complex and people have more varied jobs, there's many parts of the world I don't understand. But I think that's different from getting to the point where like nobody understands. Like, I think there are thousands of AI researchers and journalists and people who are paying close attention and have a pretty good idea of what's happening. But yeah. I see it as more of a spectrum than something that I don't think there'll be one like day or event that's like, oh, that was a singularity, and now like nobody understands what's happening.
Yeah, I think strictly speaking, it's I'm not sure the idea is that nobody will understand what's happening. It's that a week before it happens, you'll have no idea of what it's going to be like, kind mm-hmm. of, and
yeah,
or it'll be hard to develop a consensus. Or well, something.
That's like a compression, because I think I have no idea what's going to be like 20 years from now. I think I have a pretty good idea like what a month from now will look like. But yeah, maybe at some point, the idea is that progress will speed up to the point where it becomes hard to forecast a month out. And I'm pretty skeptical that that's going to happen, because I think that the physical world is just important enough that I don't think things are ever going to move that quickly.
Yeah, I haven't really used Claude Code, but this morning somebody was showing me some of the stuff it can do. And I got to say, I may be overly inclined to extrapolate, but I can see a day where certainly the conventional business models of making money off of software are not going to apply, because it's going to be so easy for people to just make whatever software they want. Mm-hmm. But, we'll see. And so here's a question. So have you updated at all over the last year or 2 years in terms of how soon you think any thresholds are going to be crossed?
I think that the progress of AI seems pretty spiky. And so, I would say that the release of 01, I guess a little over a year ago now, when they started having reasoning models, that I found that surprising. That was a big update for me. Mm-hmm. Since then, it seemed pretty smooth. Like, I would say things have kind of unfolded roughly, probably a little faster than I expected, but not dramatically faster. I started writing about agents like a little under a year ago, and mm-hmm. I assumed that we would continue to see progress on agents. And this meter graph came out, middle of last year. And I don't think I was like skeptical that would continue. So yeah, I would say progress has continued at roughly the pace I expected. I'm trying to think, is there any particular like capabilities that surprised me, either that they came about or that they didn't come about? I don't think there's been like the categories of products that exist right now are not that different, I think, from what existed a year ago. Like the coding agents are better than they were a year ago, but there definitely were coding agents a year ago. And I can't think of any like major new categories of software that have emerged in the last year.
So why do you think that even within the field, it seems to me there's been a tangible sense of awareness of and proclamations about acceleration, right? Yeah. I mean,
I was saying before, I break this down into two categories. One is just a lot of normal people tried Claude Code for the first time. And right. realize that, oh my God, like I can create computer programs, which is like a big capability that most people didn't have in the past. And now almost anybody can do that. I think that was half of it. The other half is I do think that there are software professional programmers are beginning to develop methodologies to really use these models effectively. And so even relatively small increases in model capability just make them more productive. Mm-hmm. And they are kind of, so they have the wind at their backs. Like every couple months, a new model comes out. And they're like they're like 10% more productive than they were before. And that's like, that's a big deal. Like that's faster than normal. I mean, programming has always been a profession where there's new, programmers develop new tools to automate the routine aspects of their job. But I think right now that's happening faster than it has in the past. And so programmers are excited. And because they're kind of at the center of the industry, I think their excitement kind of bleeds over to everybody else, because in some sense, they're the kind of pace setters or the the tastemakers.
Yeah. Now there's a particular example actually of somebody in the field whom you know well, Dean Ball, who until he went into the Trump administration to shape AI policy, and he has since left the Trump administration after completing his big report. But before he did that, he was co-hosting a podcast with you called AI Summer.
Yes. And we just relaunched it actually. The first episode will have been out. Yeah. It's yesterday, February 8th, that we publish our first episode since last year.
Oh, what excellent timing.
Yeah.
So yes, everyone should listen to that. It was good before. I'm sure it's good now. Well, I want to listen because I sense a contrast in your views now that may be a false impression on my part, but it seems like a stronger contrast than I had sensed earlier. You know,
I think that's right. He's always been more optimistic than me, but he's particularly excited right now. And I think I'm similarly excited to where I was a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, and it's funny because he's very kind. He's pretty anti-regulation. I mean, he went in the Trump administration. You think so?
Yeah.
But he does anticipate, I think, pretty rapid acceleration. Now, I guess he was he kind of half joking when, like, a month or two ago, he said that Claude Code is AGI. That was kind of partially a joke or not?
He said Claude 4.5 Opus, I think, was AGI. And no, I think he's serious about that. I mean, I think he would agree with what I was saying earlier about AGI being a fuzzy concept and maybe not a super useful concept. But I think to the extent that it has a coherent meaning, I think his view is that Opus 4.5 is Claude Opus 4.5 is meets the definition.
Uh-huh. But he took, like, Moltbook he saw as, I think, the realization of something he had been talking about for some time. And of course, like everybody, he conceded, look, we don't know how much of what's happening in Moltbook is truly the result of autonomous, agents, but it's the kind of thing that could happen. And he took that pretty seriously. I want to talk about business stuff, including self-driving, including your sense of what lies ahead for, like, these big companies and where value will be captured. But before we do that, I mean, first of all, I think it's about time we moved into overtime, which is available to paid subscribers of the Non-Zero newsletter. Easy to become one. I encourage it.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, I wanted to give you a chance to do any summing up about this whole issue of acceleration. I mean, let me put it this way. Here's a good way to put it. So I've got a book on AI coming out called The God Test. It's scheduled to come out with Simon & Schuster in June. I'm going to try to get them to move at least the Kindle up a little bit. And I have the sense, you're probably going to tell me this is wrong. I have the sense that, it may be, and it's a book that argues that this is going to be huge. And it talks about all this stuff, including emergent properties from, interaction among agents and so on. And now I'm kind of worried that this will be obvious to everyone by June, but you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I feel like some of the value that I bring into this is, like, as a reporter, like, I try to, like, go out in the real world and, like, talk to people about what's happening. And the mm-hmm. pattern I see over and over again is, like, you talk to AI people and they're like, look at these amazing models, look at all their amazing capabilities. And I'm like, yes, that does look amazing. And then you go talk to somebody in any other profession and, you know, they're trying AI, they're somewhat impressed by AI, but if you ask them, like, has your profession dramatically changed? They basically all say no. We published a piece a few weeks ago about lawyers. And, you know, lawyers are experimenting with AI. They're using it for research. They're using it to help with drafting. But, like, the mm-hmm. core work that lawyers do AI models can't do yet. The kind of, like, you know, figuring out, like, what should this brief say or, you know, which precedent should I cite? Like, lawyers need to do that. I guess I haven't seen anything in the last few months that thinks that's going to happen. That's going to change imminently. Like, over the next 10 years, yes, I think you're going to see big changes, but I think it's going to continue to be gradual in the way that it's been the gradual the last 3 years. I mean, I think people forget somehow, like, how freaked out people were in 2023 after GPT-4 came out. Mm-hmm. Everybody talked about, well, when GPT-5 comes out, maybe that'll be AGI, and maybe kind of wasn't clear what was going to happen, but, you know, we were going to ban, like, GPT-5 scale models because those are considered too dangerous. I just think we're going to continue seeing that, like, on the one hand, I think you have, like, you had the AI con people on a few weeks ago that got a lot of attention. They just think, like, nothing's happening. I think that's clearly wrong.
You mean the Emily Bender, Alexana?
That
did get some attention.
Yeah. And, like, I think those people are completely wrong. Like, clearly things are happening. This is going to be important, but I think it's going to be important at the scale of several years as opposed to at the scale of months. And so I don't think that the world will feel noticeably different to the average person in June than it does right now.
Yeah. So I guess final question before we go into overtime. What would it, can you imagine something that would change your mind, that something that could happen within 6 months or a year? You can pick your time frame, but something, a threshold you don't think will be crossed. And if it was crossed, you would update significantly.
I mean, I do think this continuous learning stuff is important. And if you started to see models that could come up with original ideas or operate over much longer time horizons, that would make a big impression. But the other thing is just talking to people in the world. If I started hearing from people in a bunch of different professions that wow, AI is really changing my profession, that would make a big impression. And I try to be pretty proactive about doing that. And so far, I just haven't experienced that. But I would say that would be the kind of big subjective test for me.
Yeah, there's an example or two that is taken as an example of a significant new idea, but I'll just, I'll let's go into overtime. I'll throw that at you and then we'll talk about the business side. Anyway, thanks everybody who's followed us this far. Encourage you to follow us further into overtime and become a full-fledged member of the Non-Zero newsletter.